Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Boom! Welcome to the Casterbris Podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is my genial, posh, southern co-host, James McLean. How are you, James?
Patient as ever.
Yes. How was your weekend? Before we get started,
it was absolutely brilliant. I had the best weekend I've had in a long time. Nothing could have fazed my weekend. I was going to register it as the happiest weekend I think anyone has ever had. And then for the past 40 to 50 minutes, I've been sitting here while my colleague has buggered around on his desktop, and it's ruined it. You've sullied the memory of the most perfect weekend I've ever had.
Well.
And now having to re-register it as a weekend that was pretty good, but was sullied by a northerner.
Right, thanks. Obviously, was that .com?
Yeah.
Sullied by a northerner .com.
Yeah, I'm sure it's out there. I'm not going to check.
If it's not, it should be. Hey, dear listener, did you know that Doctor Who's on Saturday night? Go on, yes you did, don't be coy. So, now we've had lots and lots of weeks of not talking about new Doctor Who, because really there hadn't been an awful lot to talk about, because they haven't told us anything. You know this. You don't need me to tell you this, because you already know this. So, today, we are going to talk about Doctor Who Series 9. We're up to 9 already, it's 10th year, obviously, but Series 9, because, Doctor Who likes to do its counting in a stupid manner. We'll probably find that there actually was a 10th year, but it was hidden between two others, and we never saw them. That's a War Doctor joke. Just
right.
Yeah. To get started then, let us, I think we should treat ourselves to, well no, we won't actually treat ourselves to that, I've changed my mind about that. The prologue, said in as little a Frankie Howard style as possible, was released by the BBC last week, the prologue to Series 9, in which the 12th Doctor met his previous acquaintance from the Sisterhood of Khan, presumably on Khan, where he was informed that someone's servants were looking for him.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of all that, somebody and someone who has servants? Because I think you're supposed to think it's the Daleks, but I'm not convinced.
I don't know. I mean, I thought she was talking about the Master through the most of it, and the rest of it. It was just so vague and oblique. It came across a little... Well, it was well acted and well presented, and there were some nice bits of dialogue. It almost came across like a sixth form production, in the sense that it was so filled with suggestion rather than anything definitive. It just sort of became a bit of a muddled mud of comments, mm-hmm. sound bites. Mm. And I started to lose interest in what they were talking about, if they were talking about anything. And it sort of ended up with the standard, you're going to your destruction thing, which has been played a couple of times at least, I'm sure, in this last 10 years. I don't know. So, yeah, I can't really comment much on it, because I just started to drone it out, phase it out.
We can more or less assume that it's not the Master, can't we? Because we've seen a clip of the Master and Clara with that disc.
Oh, have we? Well, I haven't.
We have in the trailer, yeah, in the Magician's Apprentice trailer. So it can't be the Master that she's referring to, that Ohila's referring to, because that's who the Doctor's referring to when he says about the disc, you know who to give this to. So that leaves us with a choice of possibly Davros or Supreme Dalek, but that doesn't tie in with anything else that was said, really, in my view. Then we've got some outside options, such as Fenric or Morbius.
These are all just fans.
Or the Valiard.
Yeah, God's sake. Or the Rani. I mean, how many times...
The Rani has not been mentioned. The Rani has not been mentioned on this occasion.
Only because of the gender, but of course she could swap gender.
Well, there you go. The thing is as well, I mean, you say that, oh, why? But we are talking about the Sisterhood of Khan, who previously only appeared in one serial. 40 years ago. So it's not, you know, I do know what you're saying, but at the same time, it's that's pretty oblique in itself. And
well, not really, because the Sisterhood of Khan was used in a different way within the new series. I mean, it was one of those applications where you didn't actually need to know the Sister of Khan appeared at all in the previous show. In fact, I'm sure 99% of the people who watched the that mini episode would realize that they appeared in the original series or in the mythology. So I don't think that actually really signifies any jump to tunneling out all these vague one-off characters which appeared 50 years ago or 40 years or 30 years ago. I still think it's going to be kept relatively simple. I still think, regardless of whatever picture it is, or pictures, or what are those things, moving images that you saw on your box window screen with the preview trailers, I still think it refers to the Master, because it's the only cohesive character that they really introduced which carries any sense, unless it is Davros. But again, I don't know.
Well, we're going to be surprised, aren't we? I think that's what we need to accept. We are going to be surprised.
And disappointed.
Or that. But let us not forget that we have got cliffhangers this series. So, yeah. You know, there is plenty to look forward to in Series 9 of Doctor Who.
Unless it's someone entirely new.
Well, it could be that, yeah.
Which I would say is far more likely than any of the suggestions which fans are crotch squeezing over. I don't think it's going to be any of those. I think it's most likely either going to be something obvious like Davros or the Master, or it'll be something entirely new to the mythology, which sort of makes sense, I guess. I mean, the problem with characters, isn't it, is you only have a set amount of moulds. And it comes a point where you look at an old character and you say, we could reintroduce this. Or really, why don't we just create something new? It's easier. It will appeal to all audiences on a baseline. And if we're not going to promote it, which they certainly haven't, if it is an old character coming back, it becomes even more redundant. The Daleks come back. That becomes part of your PR. If the Cybermen do, that becomes part of your PR. But this hasn't. Which is why I don't think it's anything old. I think it's either something new or something that we've already had leaked, like the Master.
Okay.
Which is why probably I won't be as disappointed as everyone else. And of course, if I'm wrong and it is Fenric, I'll be more interested than anyone else, because I was less expecting it than anyone else.
Okay.
So I win either way, really.
I'm delighted to hear that. Doctor Who Series 9 kicks off this Saturday on BBC One and BBC America at 7:40 in the UK. It's 9 Eastern Time in the United States, 8 Central. Same time in Canada on Space. Australia, if you're an ABC viewer with an iView subscription, I think that's a subscription thing or an online thing, you get to watch it live at 5:30 a.m. at the same time as we're watching it in the UK, or thereabouts. Would you do that if you were in Australia?
No.
I think it's unlikely I would. Although, in all honesty, I'm up half an hour later anyway, so maybe I would. It's difficult to say. And in Germany, they're not getting it until December, which is a bit of a shame for the Germans. I think
it's funny because live has lost all its power. Because, you know, live to a certain degree is about a communal experience, even if it is communal in the sense that, you know, everyone else or your mates are watching it, not necessarily a family in a house.
Yeah.
But now we're so far away from schedule. Well, we are compared to, say, 10 years ago. We're so far away from scheduled television that I don't know. I wouldn't get up at 5:30. I would get up whenever I'd get up, and then I could watch it with a cup of coffee by myself on my iPlayer or whatever. Wouldn't be spoiled by anyone, because I won't have to wait for a scheduled broadcast like Australia would have to 10 years ago. You would just pick it up I mean, to be fair to Australia, I don't know how their service works, whether they've got a streaming service which could capture it, or whether there is any other alternative than watching it at 5:30 in the morning. So in fairness to them, maybe that would be their only opportunity, I don't know. But for us, it's so much, everything is so streamed, isn't it, that you'd just be like, no, I'll just pick it up on whatever streaming service. Especially as we get things like Netflix and everything else starting to become more globally integrated. I don't know. Interesting question, though, sort of.
Yeah, okay. Well, Doctor Who Series 9, we're kind of just looking at it in this week's podcast, what we know, what we can maybe talk about that we can look forward to. We've got six writers: Stephen Moffat, Catherine Tregana, Mark Gatiss, Toby Whithouse, Peter Harness, and Sarah Dollard. Those of you thinking, where the hell's Jamie Matheson? He's co-written The Girl Who Died with Stephen Moffat, which seems, on the face of it, a bit of a come down from Flatline and Mummy on the Orient Express to find yourself co-writing with Stephen Moffat. What do you think? Obviously, we don't know the ins and outs of it, but that does seem to be a bit of a turnaround.
Is it a co-write?
It's a co-write, yeah.
How much so is it a co-write?
We don't know.
I mean, is it just that it's listed as a co-write?
It's listed as a co-write, yeah.
And that's what we do. I mean, there was a lot of talk last year that there was some, and there was rumours that there was some that weren't so much co-writes, but were being given dual credits that may or may not have, in writers' eyes, deserved dual credits. What I'm trying to say is that there are on this side, and there's certainly examples of it in American television, where you've got staff writing, especially, of where writers take credit for stuff which they didn't have that much involvement, but there's a hierarchy, there's a vertical hierarchy where they take more involvement or take more credit for something. And there was a suggestion that was happening over in the UK now.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that he just wasn't able to get out of that contract, and that there's someone that Stephen Moffat's name would be on there as well for his input as his role involvement. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yep.
To say it does happen as industry practice, and as I say, with the some rumours saying that was happening last year, which is why Stephen had so many co-credits. Maybe that is, I don't know. I mean, as I say, I heard that from a couple of places, that this is the sort of thing that's happening in the industry, whether it's true or not. It's a shame for Iz, because it makes it harder to work out whose voices are where. But then at the same time, you look at Water of Mars and you read up on that, and Russell T. Davies says how much influence he had in that he wasn't happy with where it was going, and he had to come in and put his input in. And but he did take a credit on that, didn't he?
Yes, he did, yeah.
He did. Yeah. But there are ones where, you know, there is a lot of involvement where credit isn't taken. So it's such a malleable process. I don't know where it goes. And as I say, the States, it's not exactly an honest process there, because you'll have staff writers, most of which will never get mentioned, who will be involved in a multitude of shows as part of the process. But their involvement is not part of the credits. So it's not like we can sort of say, well, if this is happening over here, what a load of dishonesty it is, because, you know, it happens anyway, yeah. Everywhere. So.
Yeah. Okay. So beyond writers, we've also got directors: Daniel O'Hara, Hetty McDonald, Ed Bazalgette, Daniel Netheim, Justin Malotnikov, and Rachel Talalay, again for the finale, as she did in Series 8. Now, of those people whose names I just read out, those 13 people, we're pretty certain, we can be probably 99% certain, that none of them have set out to make a bad television programme.
Absolutely.
So let's just underline that there. Various locations have been used across the UK, well, the South West and South East, and overseas in Spain as well. Magician's Apprentice and The Witch's Familiar, the first story, the two-part story, has obviously got a lot of attention, being the first story. Various things have been said by Moffat and Capaldi and Coleman. Stephen Moffat told SFX that there's a lot of Daleks, and this time we mean it. Michelle Gomez's Missy was an instant hit last year, so she's straight back to plague the Doctor and Clara in the series opener, but what brings her back into their lives is the last thing they'd expect. Again, vague, but you know, that's the that's what we expect at this time, really. Also, interestingly, is the fact that Gemma Redgrave's returning as Kate Stewart, so a bit of it's set on Earth, a bit of it's set wherever the Doctor is, and the Doctor and Clara seem to be apart for whatever reason. Maybe she's busy with exams, who knows. Being a teacher, I mean, not taking exams. But also, it does say that Claire Higgins is in it, who, as we've just discussed, is O'Hara of the Sisterhood of Khan. So whether or not we're going to see the Sisterhood of Khan again in the first two episodes or not, I don't know. It does seem that there's a lot going on in this story, but at the same time, it's a two-parter.
Yeah. So you're saying it shouldn't matter because there's more?
Well, I don't know. Am I saying that? What would you say?
It does sound... there's always a danger, I think, when shows go on. I mean, this is Doctor Who is a very unusual show, so it doesn't exactly exist in the same issue. But especially if we go back to the States again, when you get to about the sort of fourth and fifth season, the show starts to become very inverted. It starts to sort of become very aware of itself and its characters, and you get a lot of reusing of ideas, reusing of past characters. And it can sometimes start to feel a little claustrophobic, a little boxed, a little bubbled almost. And I'm always a bit wary of that when suddenly you have things like this where it feels like every stop is being pulled out. You've got Daleks, you've got Missy, obviously you've got Clara, now you've got Kate in there as well. And it starts feeling as if everything is being closed in together into a bubble. And sometimes that can, and then sometimes that can happen with the sort of spatial relationships, which I think Doctor Who's been doing too much of in the last 10 years, where we have, like we've got here, obviously stuff that's going to be on Skyro, and there's obviously stuff that's going to be Earthbound as well. As soon as you use two locations, the universe the audience sees becomes constricted. It sort of becomes more bubbled, and it doesn't feel quite as expansive when you're dealing with two spots. I mean, sometimes it works, it's fine. It's not saying you shouldn't do it, but when it happens a lot... and it has happened a lot, and that's as much Davis as Moffat. It sort of makes it feel smaller. Davis started it really with the mobile phones, where suddenly you could just call back to Earth, and suddenly the audience would be pulled back to a normal universe to compare this exciting universe with. So, yeah, I'm a little uncertain about it. Again, as we say, before we do any of these seasons, you know, this is all just speculation. It's all, I don't know, it could be absolutely brilliant, and it could be brilliantly done.
It's certainly got very good preview reviews. So that's something to encourage us. Listen, we'll move on to the two-parter, which we'll give a brief discussion to, which is by Toby Whithouse. We still don't know the titles of these episodes, which is curious. Moffat told SFX that the two-parter is written by Toby Whithouse and features an underwater base plagued by creeping ghosts and an island that is about to be submerged in water. But who or what is doing this, and how can the Doctor stop it? This is the one that plays with the idea of time-travelling ghosts.
Right.
Which does seem to be something that hasn't been done before, the possibility of meeting your own ghost.
Kind of odd that, because you'd think it would be something that would be done before.
Yeah, yeah. So that certainly seems interesting at the very least. It's got Dennis Pennis, star Paul Kay among the guest cast in that episode, as well as one of Britain's busiest voice artists and actors, Colin McFarlane. Following that... Oh, go on.
I was going to say, it's funny how that Doctor Who still relies heavily on celebrity roles. You know, people used to knock it in the 80s where it became very... Nathan Turner became synonymous with this use of celebrities. And yet we get a lot of it now. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just interesting that it has still carried that same sort of almost coffee table, sitting room, pop culture aspect where you expect to see what big guest star names will be in Doctor Who each year.
Well, you've brought that up at the right time, because episode 5 is The Girl Who Died, by Jamie Matheson and Stephen Moffat, and which introduces Maisie Williams' character, Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones, where she plays Arya Stark. They're giving absolutely nothing away about who she's playing and what she's doing. Moffat says, one thing I think is worth saying, because it keeps coming up as an issue, is that she's not playing a returning character. She's a new character. She's not a character from the Doctor's past. Whether he's telling the truth or not, only time will tell. Obviously, this is Stephen Moffat we're talking about. Maisie Williams herself has not given in on that answer either, only saying that she puts the Doctor to the test, and it's a sort of dynamic that we haven't seen before. And Moffat told SFX that the episodes are exceptional. The first part features Vikings fighting mercenary robots and a dragon. That moves on into episode 6, The Woman Who Lived, which changes things around a bit. Moffat's saying that the story is a group of highwaymen dealing with a Norse god. That's who David Schofield has been cast as. You may recall that it was initially Brian Blessed that was cast.
Right.
Which is a bit of a shame that he fell ill and he had to pull out of a stage production as well. So there's a lot going on with those two. And again, I think the fact that these have got different writers, I think this pulls us into that thing that we discussed briefly, I think last week or the week before, about the format of this series and the two-parters and three-parters and the single-parters and the way that it's overarching in a way that perhaps hasn't been done before. Episode 7 and 8 are Invasion of the Zygons / Inversion of the Zygons, which appear to be a standard two-parter with cliffhanger sort of format. And it's a kind of follow-on in some ways to the Zygon subplot of The Day of the Doctor.
Okay.
And also in there is among the cast, we've got Kate Stewart again. General Redgrave is Kate Stewart. But among the cast is... Oh, and we better mention that Osgood is back. But among the cast is the thick of it's Rebecca Front.
Okay, yeah.
So let's hope there's no swearing.
Hmm.
You've been watching a bit of the thick of it lately, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I watched all 4 seasons.
More than a bit of it, then.
More than a bit of it. Yes. The whole of it.
Yes. Right. Okay, episode 9 is by Mark Gatiss. This is the found footage episode.
Right.
Moffat says, it wasn't possible to do such an episode 10 years ago when the show came back. I'm not entirely sure that's accurate. Factually, I mean. And Mark has been rewriting it over and over again to make it perfect. It's a beautiful story, very eerie and special. I think it's going to be an instant classic. This is the episode that features Rhys Shearsmith. Some people have said, it's the Valiard! Or, he's the second Doctor! But clearly, you see the way he's dressed, he's clearly not the second Doctor. He looks like he's maybe stepped off Babylon 5 or something in the clothes that he's wearing. And among the guest cast, we don't know much about this. Among the guest cast, there's Bethany Black, who is an open trans lesbian, she describes herself as.
Okay.
Elaine Tan from EastEnders and Entourage, Neat Moen and Paul Courtney Hugh. I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce that last word there. The whole found footage thing sounds interesting. If it can be done in a way that, you know, takes us away from things like Blair Witch or Cloverfield or whatever. But there's a possibility as well that it might look a bit tired, so I hope they've got a good angle on it. What do you think?
Yeah, strangely enough, I watched Cloverfield the other day as well. So.
Did you?
Yes.
I haven't watched that for a while, actually. I fancy rewatching it.
Do you, really?
Yeah, I did. No, I enjoyed it when I watched it. Yeah. Oh. I think you can learn something from it. I think it's a rare film that you can learn something from it. I'm not saying I don't want to get deep into Cloverfield or what you can learn from it, but I think it is one of those rare films where you can watch it and learn something about how it's been produced. In the terms of direction and cinematography, whereas most films you probably wouldn't, because you don't tend to notice.
I just prefer if they'd actually just told me what I had to learn rather than I had to watch it. But that's me.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the fan footage thing is a... I don't know. I'm trying to be open-minded. I've been very negative this podcast. I'm trying to be open-minded about it, because... I mean, if nothing else, the whole format of the series, for whatever reason it's done into a lot of two-parters, is different. So it means that it's going to have a different feel in some way or another. So it's not like expecting the same as before. So these things could work. There is a different feel to it already. So hopefully these will...
Well, found footage as well. It's just a different way of telling a story, isn't it, ultimately? Much like, say... Blink is a different way of telling a story because it's all DVD extras and what have you, or well, obviously it's not all that, but you know, the scenes with the Doctor, or even, you know, the evidence segments of the Trial of a Time Lord are just different ways of telling a story, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't so much. Especially as long as there's no kind of doctored scenes like there was in the Trial of a Time Lord, which totally baffle you, then we should be fine. Let's just say, okay, episode 10, we don't know much about it at all. Stephen Moffat says, an episode which leapt out as why haven't we done this already in SFX, and Sarah Dollard had kind of turned down Doctor Who a lot of the time, on several occasions, but decided that she, that the idea that she was pitched by Moffat was something that she would be interested in doing. Now, they had a character in her script that was similar to Rigsy from Flatline, and so they suggested switching it for Rigsy from Flatline. So that will be interesting to see Joven Wade thrust into action again. Episode 11 is the one-hander episode which apparently features no other actor than Peter Capaldi. It's a companion light episode. Stephen Moffat says that I've got a script where I've set myself a ludicrous challenge. Where episode 11 comes up, you'll see just how ludicrous a challenge I've set myself. I'm in a state of panic about it. Rachel Talalay.
No, he's not.
Rachel Talalay is directing that one. You don't think he's in a state of panic about it?
No.
No? Okay.
You can almost tell in the way he's talking about it, he's extremely pleased with himself over it. So I don't think he's in a state of panic at all. I think you don't set yourself a ludicrous, as he puts it, a ludicrous idea unless you feel that you can conquer it.
Fair enough.
I mean, I think it's a good thing to try. I'm not against the idea at all. I think it's good. I just think he's being a little bit coy, or should I say a little bit McCoy. Yeah, I was going to use it earlier when you used coy, but you moved on too quickly.
Oh, right, okay. Been saving that, have you?
Yeah. I should have saved it perhaps a little longer, say another 20 minutes or so.
What, till we finished?
Yeah.
leave them wanting more, won't you, that line. Now, episode 12, we don't know much about. It's not even worth talking about it, other than it's the end of the series. And that in the following episode, we know that River Song is back at Christmas. We'll come to Christmas, you know, in December, as we do every year. We're not going to preview Christmas episode now. So, you know, there's this whole thing about whether Clara's going to survive or leave the TARDIS. Has Jenna Coleman left Doctor Who? She's attended some conventions whilst they've been filming the latter episodes. So, we don't really, and she's attending conventions whilst filming the Christmas episode as well. So, we've seen script meetings without Jenna Coleman present, but I think that was just a tease, really, or just a coincidence.
Didn't we have this for Series 8?
We did, yeah, I was just coming to that.
We saying that, yeah, that she was missing some X and Y. Yeah. So
there's no way, there's no way we can say until it actually happens whether or not she's staying or going.
I think she's probably going.
I think she's probably going as well. I think this is probably the time for her to go as well. Not because I'm sick of her. I'm not, because I'm quite happy to look at Jenna Coleman when she comes on the television. I've got no complaints there. You know, that's not from a purely sexist point of view. Because she's a good actress and she's done a superb job in bringing a character to Clara that probably wasn't there in the initial script. Certainly. And she's enjoyable and fun to watch, and she seems to have developed a good rapport with Peter Capaldi as well, which is always important in this situation. But, you know, you can't have the same companion forever, can you? Otherwise, we'd be looking at Billy Piper still. Yeah. That might make 12 fans in the United States extremely happy, but for the rest of us, I don't think so.
Funny, isn't it, that most shows would have had that, you know, okay, let's throw in the X-Files as a... being a topical thing,
mm-hmm.
according to Twitter. It seems to be every other post. I don't know quite how it manages that. But, you change an actor, Series 9 or whatever it was, and suddenly people who can't cope with it. You know, you're two key ones, stick with it. And yet with Doctor Who, you never could have that. So it must have been a shock for a lot of new fans from 2005 to see that person go at the end of 2006.
Yeah, totally.
And the show carry on. But, yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking, is it sexist if you you enjoy looking at someone? Is that really sexist? It'd be sexist, I suppose, if you said that if you didn't care what their skills were. Oh, well, even then, you know, you're only human. I am in full
agreement with you. But unfortunately, the internet does seem to be ever more encroached by.
Very aggressive
social justice warriors who seem to want to put a stop to any kind of nice thing between men and women.
I mean, there's a truth there as well, isn't there? Because, I mean, there are arguments. I'm not denying that at all. I mean, you can sort of, when I look back and I see Terence Dix or one of the early companions sort of saying I was there just for the dads, or, you know, and they'd be saying we'd put them in there just for the dads, and uh-huh. You kind of feel, yeah, that feels incredibly derivative and sexist to be sort of suggesting that so lightly and so, I don't know, casually, that is what that character is there for. I think that is at the same time, people are people, and they will be, you know, you can't help your sexual orientation. If you find something attractive, you find something attractive, and if you watch it for that, you watch it for that. Does it make you sexist? I don't know. I really don't. But I mean, certainly with Jenna, with these, you know, Jenna Louise Coleman, and to be fair with all of them, you know, that they're actors. So even if you do tune in because you enjoy the look of them, you wouldn't be able to deny that there is more to them than just their look. And there's certainly more put into their characters than just how they look, which is good. So there has been progression.
Yeah. Yeah. So, No.
Sorry, you just when you said it, I was just thinking, yeah, it's a good point, isn't it? Because it is something which has stuck with Doctor Who, is, you know, the need for the female companion, which is bad, isn't it? I mean, we have issues today where we say, you know, well, even this very day we're recording, you've got the whole Shadow Cabinet, and you've got the question of should it be 50-50 gender, or should it be based on skill and experience, not gender, or, you know, how, but should you be representing a large proportion of your population, you know, half your population, with, you know, you've got all these questions. And the same thing comes down to things like Doctor Who. You know, he always has a main female companion. Should he always be a female? Should it be the best person? But I don't know. Yeah,
well, you know. I think we both agree that it's time that there should be a male companion.
Oh yeah,
whether definitely. Or not it's just a male on his own or a male and a woman, but a proper male companion, not a Rory, not a Mickey, someone who's more like Jamie or Harry.
I agree. I mean, I can't deny that. I think Jenna is a very attractive woman, and I part of what I think makes her attractive is I like the way she plays the character, unless she's written to be a dick like she was in Kill the Moon. But I would, you know, I think if you're watching television just for the aesthetic of the woman or the I wouldn't say that that's. I say, I don't know whether sexist is a funny word that needs to be redefined. I certainly say it's shallow. It's a shallow reason to watch someone putting their heart and soul into a craft, and you're just watching it for the look. But I would certainly have a male companion now. No, absolutely.
Yeah. It does seem strange that hasn't happened. Okay, we've got to the end of our Series 9 preview. So do you just want to sum up? Well, I mean, you have kind of done what I wanted you to do already, which is kind of how you felt that the sort of, like, the feel and the mix of the episodes might present a cohesive whole.
I think, as I said with Series 8, well, when we were talking about Series 9, nearer to Series 8, my only concern with a lot of this is we get so few episodes a year that you kind of feel like, I don't want you to experiment too much, because we don't get much as it is. So, you know, if you screw up a story, you've screwed up a 12th, or possibly in this case, almost a 6th of my quota this year to try and do something different. You know, if it was like American television where you get a 24 series run, you feel, yeah, you can experiment a bit more because you've got, you can carry the majority of it, can carry off of what the audience wants.
Yeah.
And then I get a little apprehensive when it's two parties for that reason, as we've said before, and I get a little apprehensive when they try to experiment. Yet at the same time, the show has always thrived on on the ingenuity and the attempt to try and do something different as a show, which is why it always gets me when fans say, you know, you're doing it wrong, or, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, because, you know, well, that's the whole point of this show. It survived because it's not just done what it's meant to do. It's tried to organically change, to adapt, to evolve. So, yeah, so I don't know. So, yeah, I'm sort of vaguely interested because I was disappointed with Series 8 quite considerably. I like Capaldi, and having watched a thick of it, I have realised there is actually very little difference between the Doctor and the thick of it, really.
Malcolm Tucker.
Bar the swearing, really. I mean, he's not playing anything horrendously different. But that's not bad, and it's fun. I like it. And I like Jean-Louise Coleman. I think there's some interesting stuff out there. Just see what they do with it, I guess.
Okay. Okay, you may have noticed, dear listener, that Brian isn't with us this week. But fear not, because next week he will be back. And what's more, you'll be able to see him. Because next week, and the aim is to do this for the following 11 weeks, we're podcasting live on Sunday afternoons on Google Hangouts, so you'll be able to watch live either in Hangouts or on YouTube, and if you're particularly lucky, on the website as well. That last bit means that I have to do some extra clicking and typing, so that might not happen. If you're thinking, oh my god, what about iTunes /audioboom/ the audio podcast on Casterbus, don't worry, we'll still be doing that as well. It'll be the same podcast, you'll just get it a little earlier, and you'll be able to listen to people interacting with us, not their voices, just, you know, them saying something and us responding to it. So that should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to that. It'll be nice to be able to do that for a few weeks with you guys joining in with us. So, hey, exciting times. Now, it is I was hoping to have some material this afternoon to share with you, but I don't, as Gareth hasn't sent it yet, Gareth Cavana, that is. As alluded to a few weeks ago, there is an event with Philip Hinchcliffe in Manchester on Sunday the 4th of October in 3 weeks' time, which we're excited about. I'm hoping to attend myself. There's a few other things that we might be doing on the site with regards to this event, so keep your eyes peeled for that. But it's going to be similar to the afternoon with Terence Dix a few months ago. It's going to be a sort of afternoon with Philip Hinchcliffe, so that's going to be really interesting. One of Doctor Who's great producers there. And that brings us roundly to the recommendations section of the podcast. James McLean.
Okay.
Would thou like to go first?
Or
should I just recommend Death in Paradise again?
Is that what you're going to do?
I don't think I've had anything new. No, there is one thing. I can't recommend it completely because I haven't read it yet, but I have got a copy of Mutant 59, The Plastic Eater, which is by Kit Pedler and Jerry Davis, the creators of The Cybermen.
Right.
This is a sort of a sci-fi thriller, 245 pages long. It says on the back, a new nightmare from the creators of Doomwatch, which is a show they made in the 70s, comes a chilling and topical story of what can happen when scientific research, done in the name of progress, backfires to spread terror throughout the crippled hell that is London. Totally up my street. I'm going to be reading this week, and I will let you know next week how I found it. Your turn, James.
Well, I've been watching a hell of a lot of a show called Community, which I'm sure a lot of people have seen because it came out in 2009. It's an American sitcom, which is horrendously what they would call these days meta in its storylines. And because it's on Netflix and because it was came out in 2009, that means there's 5 seasons for me to eat my way through. Plus, there's a 6th one that came out on one of the view on VOD channels.
Netflix.
And I've just really loved it.
Right. Okay.
I don't know why. I don't know whether because I've always been someone who's been quite heavily into education. It's set around an American community college, which for those who don't live in America. community college has the same sort of stigma as colleges have in UK compared to universities. And it's about people of a variety of different ages in a study group going through their time in community college. And it's just a very, very clever concept. It's beautifully handled. It plays with its format quite well. It doesn't need to, because it's interaction between them. It's almost like an extended breakfast club, I suppose. You could sort of take it. It's that sort of dynamic, but with a different range of ages, and seeing them go through their time at college. And it's just really enjoyable, easy, digestible food, which I can sit down on my tablet and watch at night and just feel good. And it's just so nice to have a show that you can just sit, watch, and just feel good about. I've just been watching that. So, I mean, if you're into sitcoms, you know, you like, it's got Chevy Chase in there for the first four seasons, I think. So there's your big name. If you like comedy and you like American comedy and you like something with a little sort of thought and exploration and fun, and it's just, you know, go and watch it. That's my recommendation.
Okay. I don't think we can say further than that. There's just one other thing. Last week I recommended The Impossible Worlds book that's coming out by Stephen Nicholas and Mike Tucker. I've actually had a copy sent to me, which I'm dying to read properly as soon as I get the opportunity. So look out for that. And we've also got a competition running on Casterbus at the moment to win a subscription to Hatchett's Doctor Who The Complete Collection. If you haven't got your entry in for that yet, please do very soon. The competition closes this weekend. And then straight away after that, we've got a new competition starting for a copy of a different book whose name currently escapes me, but I'll have it by next week. Can't find it anywhere. Oh yes, Doctor Who The Time Lord Letters.
Right.
Yes, we'll be giving that away from next week. So thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to this week's Castovers podcast with a K. Do not forget that we will be live on Google Hangouts next week, on Sunday at 3 p.m. UK time. And hopefully Brian will be back with us then. Certainly be James and I. And you're welcome to take part in sending us messages or commenting as we talk. But until then, it is, I believe, goodbye from James. And it's certainly goodbye from me. So until next week. Bye.